Good day, everyone, and welcome to today's conference, Legal Association's Call for Independent Immigration Court System. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, you will have the opportunity to ask questions during the question-and-answer session. You may register to ask a question by pressing the star and one on your touchtone telephone. You may withdraw yourself by pressing the pound key. Please note this call may be recorded. I'll be standing by if you should need any assistance. It is my pleasure to turn the program over to Greg Chen.
Thank you so much, operator. So welcome to our telephonic press conference. I am Greg Chen, the Director of Government Relations with the American Immigration Lawyers Association. I'll be moderating our call today. AILA is the private voluntary bar association of immigration lawyers, comprised of over 15,000 immigration lawyers and law professor members. In a moment, you will hear from our four speakers. In order of speaking appearance, they are Jeremy McKinney. He is the second vice president of AILA and practices in North Carolina and Georgia. Next will be Wendy Wayne, who is the chair of the American Bar Association's Commission on Immigration. Next will be Elizabeth Stevens, who is the chair of the Federal Bar Association Immigration Law Section. And our final speaker is Judge Denise Slavin, a former immigration judge and also president emeritus of the National Association of Immigration Judges. Each of the different speakers will bring a different perspective as representative of legal institutions. The important thing here is that all of the speakers today share one unified concern, which is that the U.S. immigration court system is in urgent need of reform. And the only way to accomplish this is for Congress to act and to create an independent immigration court that is separate from the Department of Justice. Today, our four organizations, AILA, the ABA, the FBA, and NAIJ, sent a letter to Congress urging them to introduce legislation that accomplishes this aim. The speakers will explain why urgent action is needed, and in just a few words, the court system, first of all, is no longer fair or impartial, and it, in its current state, cannot guarantee due process to those who appear before it as the Constitution demands. The court system is also not efficient and now has a backlog of about 900,000 cases, causing severe delays for those appearing before it of several years, typically. Simply hiring more judges will not solve this problem. The Department of Justice's own policies, as the speakers will explain, are making it literally impossible for judges to properly manage their dockets and process cases efficiently. So without further ado, I'm going to turn it over to the speakers, and I'm turning it over first to Jeremy McKinney of the American Immigration Lawyers Association. Jeremy?
Thanks so much, Greg. Again, my name is Jeremy McKinney. I'm AILA's current second vice president, and I'm based in Greensboro, North Carolina. I've been practicing in immigration courts throughout the Southeast for over 20 years, appearing primarily before immigration judges in Charlotte, North Carolina, as well as Atlanta and Lumpkin, Georgia. And based on that experience, I can tell you the point cannot be repeated enough. The current system does not provide due process of law, a right extended to every person in the United States. At its core, due process means a full and fair hearing before an impartial judge. The process which is due must also comport with the gravity of the situation. Yet the system, which was built in 2002, is all too often not full, not fair, not impartial, and wholly inadequate for those facing exile from this country. So, I want to expand on that very briefly. The system is not full. IJs do not have sufficient time or support to conduct full hearings. I often see judges swear clients to their affidavits in lieu of providing direct testimony. I see attorneys pressured to keep it short or cut witnesses. Worst of all, in my cases, the administrative record that we develop is often more important than the evidence that we present through live testimony, and it is a record which at its best is the object of a speed reading exercise, or at its worst, not read at all. The system is also not fair. As many of you already know, there's no right to counsel. If you can't afford a lawyer or don't have access to pro bono assistance, you simply don't have one. less than 15% of detainees have lawyers. Many judges do not have the time or resources to provide simultaneous interpretation, and most importantly, the rules of evidence literally do not apply. Hearsay is perfectly fine. One-sided reports are presented as fact even when the report's author is not made available for testimony. The system is not impartial. The Department of Justice is our nation's premier law enforcement agency. The immigration judges and even Board of Immigration Appeals members are not considered true judges by the DOJ. They're simply considered employees. As former AG Sessions illustrated over and over and over again, any of their decisions can be reversed by him, a single person. Attorney General Sessions used this power repeatedly to attack administrative independence, ending administrative closure, ending the ability of immigration judges to unilaterally terminate cases, attacking the ability of immigration judges to even postpone or continue cases. And finally, the system is wholly inadequate. Why do death penalty cases often last decades before an execution? For fear of a mistake. We know most of the criminal defendants are guilty, but we afford a meaningful trial and appellate process to ensure that we are not making a mistake. My clients in immigration court don't share the same criminal guilt. They are often running from legitimately dangerous places and are sharing an objective truth which has been corroborated to the best of our ability. Yet DOJ's immigration court system does not provide adequate safeguards to those fleeing persecution and torture, even though making a mistake could result in the death of the person being deported. As ALA's Board of Governors concluded over a year ago, you can't fix a broken system through more immigration judges. Again, judges in name alone, subject to the will of DOJ. The current system is in need of fundamental reform and, most importantly, independence. It is time for the Department of Justice and the immigration court system to get a divorce. Next, we'll hear from Wendy Wayne from the ABA.
Thank you. My name is Wendy Wayne. As introduced, I'm the chair of the American Bar Association Commission on Immigration. The ABA believes that a separate immigration court system would ensure the independence of immigration judges, ensure fairness and the perception of fairness, and also due process, promote efficiency and timely decision-making without sacrificing quality, and increase the professionalism of the immigration judiciary. This is why we've joined together with ALA, the Federal Bar Association, and the National Association of Immigration Judges to call on Congress to establish an independent immigration court. One of the distinctive hallmarks of our democracy is an independent judicial system, the principle that all those present in our country are entitled to fair and impartial consideration in legal proceedings where important rights and privileges are at stake. And that certainly applies in the immigration removal proceeding context. Promoting and protecting the independence of judicial systems has been one of the ABA's long-standing core priorities. The immigration courts issue life-altering decisions each day that may deprive individuals of their freedom, that separate families, including from U.S. citizen family members, and in the case of those seeking asylum, may be literally a matter of life or death. Yet the system lacks the basic structural and procedural safeguards that we take for granted in other areas of our justice system. For example, a right to appointed counsel for indigent individuals when life and liberty are at stake and when the government is represented by a trained lawyer. The ABA has long advocated for increased independence of our immigration courts. In 2006, we called for ensuring the neutrality and independence of immigration judges and of any federal agency by which they're employed, as well as increased due process rights for those in removal proceedings. In 2010, the ABA Commission on Immigration issued a comprehensive report on reforming the immigration system, along with the law firm of Arnold and Porter. And among the numerous recommendations, the report called for the creation of an independent immigration court system. And again, in March of 2019, we issued an update report on reforming the immigration system. Among the many recommendations in this update report, the ABA reiterated its call for an independent immigration court, which has become even more necessary with developments in the intervening years since 2010, such as the elimination of tools used by immigration judges to control their dockets, such as continuances, administrative closure, and termination, and the establishment of case production quotas with potential disciplinary action for noncompliance. The politicization of hiring and prioritization of cases, which threaten not only independence and the perception of fairness, but increase the backlogs, and the increased use of case certification by the Attorney General to refer cases to himself and allow him to overturn years of precedent without any transparency or due process safeguards. A core principle of any judicial process is that the adjudication of cases should be decided on the merits, with the application of the law to the facts by a neutral and independent judge, with current immigration courts being subject to the whims of politics and political appointees. True neutrality and independence is impossible. In addition to ensuring fairness and due process, an independent court would also be more efficient, with judges having more control over their dockets and not being subject to shifting case priorities and reassignments based on political or enforcement considerations. Such actions have been taken by multiple administrations and continue today, significantly contributing to backlogs in the courts. I now want to turn this over to Elizabeth Stevens, Chair of the Federal Bar Association Immigration Law Section.
Thank you, Wendy. I have been the Chair of the Immigration Law Section of the Federal Bar Association for almost 2 years now, but I've been active in the association for quite some time. For almost a decade, the Immigration Law Section has looked to change our immigration court system from a top-down bureaucratic agency adjudication system into a true court that is managed by judges instead of by political appointment. In 2010, the Immigration Law Section voted to create a proposal to actually do that. And in 2013, the FBA accepted the recommendations of the Immigration Law Section, and since that time has included the proposal in its annual issues agenda. The idea of an independent Article I immigration court is not new. In 1981, the Select Commission on Immigration included such a call for an Article I court in their final report. From 1982 on, various bills, many sponsored by former Republican Representative Bill McCollum, were introduced. And in 2017, the FBA created its own detailed draft legislation to create an Article I court. Our nonpartisan good government proposal is modeled on the existing independent Article I courts created by Congress. Essentially, what our bill has been constructed to do is to move the courts with a simple lift out of the Department of Justice into its own court system, basically from a 1950s bungalow that's got a little bit of flood damage into a new, brand new modern building with Wi-Fi. The bill proposes that the new court be proposed of two components, an appellate division and a trial division. The appellate division would be appointed by the president with consent of the Senate. However, only one-third would normally be appointed during any presidential term. The trial division, which would constitute the current immigration judge corps and the judges from the Office of the Chief Administrative Hearing Officer, which hears complaints against employers, would be appointed by the Appellate Division. They would be independent 15-year terms and terminated only for good cause. The bill retains current Article III judicial review in the numbered courts. There is no change in subject matter jurisdiction other than the merging of the issues currently adjudicated by the Office of the Chief Administrative Hearing Officer. With the inclusion of OCAHO, all parties may appeal from an appellate division decision. We did not include government funding of appointed counsel. We did include civil contempt authority. The courts would have inherent mandamus authority to order adjudication of of collateral issues in cases that are already before the court. The court would have rule-making authority in its own budget, plus the ability to contract with other government entities like the U.S. courts themselves, so that perhaps we could finally get actual and workable e-filing in the immigration court system. Right now, it's paper. There's lots of other details, but I don't want to take up too much time. So at this time, I'd like to turn the call over to Judge Denise Slavin. Thank you.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Denise Slavin. I am recently retired as an immigration judge. I retired on March 30th, and I've been over a decade on the leadership of the National Association of Immigration Judges. I feel like the National Association of Immigration Judges has been the canary in the mines on this topic. I mean, we've been fighting for way over a decade to try to become an independent court, and the need has never been greater. Judges need to have the freedom and the tools to manage the docket in efficient ways. Cases should be scheduled when they're ready to be heard, not based on politics. Instead, we have two things. We have aimless docket reshuffling and wasteful docket clogging. Now, what do I mean by aimless docket reshuffling? Under the last two administrations, we've been forced to cancel cases that were ready to be heard, that were ready to become before the judge, and suddenly put on cases that weren't because they were more important to the administration. The one administration, it was children's cases, had to be heard within 30 days of crossing the border. Nobody's ready to go before a judge within 30 days of coming before the border, but over the border. But we had to cancel cases that were ready for their final decisions and final hearings on merits of asylum cases, or ready to come back and report on a status of what was happening with the visa, so that we could hear all of these cases and then just reschedule all of them en masse. What do I mean by wasteful docket clogging? Every court has tools to take cases off the docket that neither party is ready to go forward on. Those tools have been taken from us. And we are forced to hear over and over again cases that are just not ready to be heard and reset them and clogging the docket with them. Judges should be faithful to the law, act impartially, and not be swayed by partisan interests. The National Association of Immigration Judges, each and every member, believes in that. We negotiated an ethics code with the department to do that. And what happened? Instead, we have obstacles to that that we are fighting against every day. We have quotas imposed on us. We have the obstacles of our own administration issuing press releases, adding to concerns about the court's partiality. We have the obstacles of the administration setting priorities based on partisan interests. Now, let me explain to you about quotas and what they actually have. When we come in every day, we have a dashboard sitting on our computer. It looks like a gas gauge. It has red, yellow, and green. One of them, for example, is continuances. And if you've granted too many continuances, it might be in the yellow, or it might be on the edge of the green, or it might be in the red. So you sit down and you see that dashboard updated every day, and then you have 50 motions on your desk to decide to continue. And there's a legal basis for that continuance, but then you have that dashboard staring at you. Many judges have the courage to refuse to even turn that dashboard on, but then they're putting their jobs on the line by doing that, because if they get into that red portion of the dashboard, they could lose their jobs. Court funds should be used to ensure the court operates efficiently and fairly, but instead they're used based on political priorities. For example, it's recently been announced that there is unclear about whether interpreters are going to be hired for master calendars. Now, these are the original arraignments where people come into court. In a detained setting, a case can end at a master. Someone can come into court and say that they wanted to accept an order of removal. This is a very difficult decision, and the judge needs to be sure under the law that they understand all of the options available to them. How can you do that if you don't have a court interpreter? Or if you're dealing in a detained setting by televideo and have to call someone over the telephone to be an interpreter, that you have no idea their competence. There's just no reason for not having courts interpreters. The court's been around for ages. There's no reason except for inappropriately using funds in other reasons. For example, to set up dashboards for judges about whether they're doing well on their numbers. Our judges are fighting every day. We want to be fair and impartial, but we need the structure to do it. An independent immigration court is the only way to assure that the court is efficient, properly resourced, impartial, fair, and has the trust of the people we serve. And with that, I'll turn it back to you, Mr. Chen.
Thank you so much, Judge Slavin, and to all of our previous speakers for illuminating this issue so clearly. For all the press that are participating and listening on the call, if you want to be able to contact any of the speakers after the call, you should reach out to Tessa Wiseman at AILA or Jacqueline Salmon at the ABA, who have, I believe, already been in touch with many of you. Then, without further ado, I'm going to turn it over to Leo, the operator. Would you please give instructions for how the press can queue up for questions?
At this time, if you'd like to ask a question, press star 1 on your touchtone phone. That is star 1 now on your touchtone telephone. We'll take our first question from Beth Fertig of WNYC Public Radio.
Oh, hi. Thank you very much. I wanted to know, are there any lawmakers who are sponsoring this legislation?
At this time, this is Elizabeth Stevens. We do not have an official sponsor. We have several different both senators and representatives from both sides of the aisle who we are talking to, but do not have any formal actual sign-ons to the bill.
And this is Greg Chen with AILA. I will also say that AILA has been talking with both chambers and members of both parties. As Elizabeth had mentioned before, there is interest from both sides of the aisle on this, recognition from both sides of the aisle of how important this kind of reform would be. Because it's a fairly complicated process, and you heard Elizabeth Stevens walk through their proposal at the FBA, it's something that will take time. We want to make sure it gets done right. But we're looking forward to action from the Hill fairly soon. Next question.
Once again, to ask a question, press star 1 on your touch tone telephone. We'll take our next question from Tal Copan, San Francisco. Your line is open.
Hey, my question is along the same lines. I was actually going to ask if there was an official sponsor, but beyond that, has any lawmaker ever introduced a bill that would have actually created Article 1 courts instead of the immigration court system, this Congress or previous ones?
This is Elizabeth Stevens. Yes, there were bills introduced from 1982 through 1999 to create an Article One, an independent Article One court system. They all had different features from, in some ways, from the FBA bill. But there have been bills introduced that never got very far in the congressional lawmaking stew. Since 1999, I'm not aware of any that have actually been introduced. Several have been talked about.
Are any of the folks who introduced the 82 to 99 bills still around that, like, were leaders on it?
In Congress? No. The one person that I know that introduced the bill would be Representative Bill McCollum, former Representative Bill McCollum from Florida.
Okay, thank you.
Our next question is from Julia Preston of the Marshall Project.
Yeah, thank you for holding this call. I have two questions. One is, are all of the associations on the call supporting the FBA bill, or is that a notional example? And my second question is, given this long history that you've recounted of efforts to create an independent immigration court, why do you think it could happen now? It seems that people have responded to this idea by saying it sounds like a great idea, but it's never going to happen. So why do you think it could happen now?
Greg, if I could take the second part of that question. Julia, I think that this has suddenly become a dream or a theory into something that could become a reality due to the current administration continuing to push and push the boundaries of fair, full, and neutral decision-making, especially through the series of decisions from former Attorney General Sessions that has been a direct attack on the independence of the immigration judges and the BIA. Speaking only for AILA, we support the concept of an Article I court and the majority of the FBA bill, but I do think that all of our organizations have differences in the details, but we agree far more than we disagree, and we all look forward to working with Congress on a unified plan.
Thank you, Jeremy. Anybody else want to answer that?
This is Wendy Wayne. I would just echo what Jeremy said as far as our position on, and we look forward to continuing to work with the other organizations on this proposal.
This is Elizabeth Stevens. I would agree that that there are some minor differences among the different organizations here as to small issue areas of the bill, and we have been working on those with them, trying to come up with a solution that everyone is happy with. I think one of the reasons that one of the reasons that this hasn't come forward before is because there's a real barrier on the Hill right now to comprehensive immigration reform. The sides are too far apart, and anything that says immigration in it is automatically becomes a hot issue. So the reason the FBA put forward the bill is to create a good government, nonpartisan bill that is not going to that should not hit significant bumps in the road on the way to finding a full majority.
This is Denise. Go ahead, Denise. This is Denise Slavin. I would just say that the NAIJ is fully behind an Article I bill. I think there might be some details, as everybody said, that we still need to work out. But this is if there's going to be any way to break down this barrier on passing immigration legislation, this is the legislative sweet spot. It's good government for everybody. Bill McCollum, who introduced this, was a Republican. It just makes sense. It makes to make the courts efficient and fair.
And Julia, this is Greg Chen. I would just add to that and say, part of the impetus now that is being felt quite compellingly on the Hill is that the backlog of cases is growing and has grown tremendously in just the past few years. So that is creating a sense of real urgency that the system is in crisis. In addition, what exacerbates that is what Jeremy McKinney had flagged before, that the Department of Justice has implemented policies that are making it more difficult for the courts to operate efficiently and are increasing that backlog. So those factors are coming together as a confluence of pressure that I believe is being felt more substantially on the Hill than it has in past years. Should we go to the next question, operator?
Once again, to ask a question, press star 1 on your touchtone phone. One moment while we queue. And it appears that we have no further questions at this time.
Great. Thank you, operator. Before we conclude, and just in case there's other questions that queue up in the next moment, I'm going to give a last opportunity for any of the 4 speakers to offer a final comment. I'll start in the same order as people spoke. Jeremy McKinney, do you have a final comment?
Thanks, Greg, for the opportunity to speak. We already have Article I independent courts for tax, for bankruptcy, for areas where the stakes are high, but they're not as high as potential death, persecution, and torture in another country. So we really need an independent court system now.
Thank you, Jeremy. Wendy Wayne?
Thank you, Greg. In addition to ensuring that those who need legal counsel have access to it, the primary goals of the American Bar Association in regard to immigration courts, as it is in all courts where matters of such significance are decided, is to ensure that parties are treated fairly and receive due process, and that the courts and its judges are impartial and truly independent to decide cases based only on the law and the facts. And creating independent immigration courts will go a long way to meeting those goals.
Thank you, Wendy. Elizabeth Stevens.
Thank you, Greg. The FBA is fully behind the effort to move the immigration courts into an Article I system. Independent Article I system. We're happy to work with any individual to help get this to fruition. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Elizabeth. And finally, but not leastly, Judge Slavin.
Thank you. I think this has been a fascinating time in terms of all of the support. Virtually every legal organization is in support of an Article I court for the first time. And I think Congress has come to the realization that throwing money at the court is not working. At one point we were drastically undersourced, and now they're throwing money, but throwing money at a broken system is not going to work. The backlog has increased dramatically under the last two administrations. We're almost up to 1 million cases at this point. And the backlog will not be alleviated, and the courts will not be fixed until they are restructured to an Article I court. Thank you.
Thank you to all of you. Leo, do we have any additional questions that have queued up for reporters?
Once again, press star 1 if you'd like to ask a question. And we do. Tessa Wiseman, one moment, please.
Hi, Leo. I just wanted to let you know that Kate Morrissey was having trouble. She's from the San Diego Union-Tribune. She's having trouble asking her question, but her question is, what would this do for some of the statistics that we see about discrepancies in grant rates among judges?
Who would like to take that question?
I think, let me say, this is Denise Slavin at the National Association of Immigration Judges. There are discrepancies. It's interesting that it's been focused on the immigration court versus other courts. It is a natural part of any court system that you're going to have discrepancies in grant rates. In criminal courts, you talk about the hanging judge. So it's going to happen anywhere. But at this point, we cannot, the system, there are ways to address those discrepancies, and we cannot even begin to address those until we have a court that's not politicized. One of the problems that the people who have talked about the discrepancies have noted have been in politicized hiring, which has gone on historically, and there are some concerns that is going on continuing to this day. And with politicized hiring, you're definitely going to have discrepancies of this nature. And so until the court has made an Article I court, we will not be able to address these concerns.
Mm-hmm. This is Elizabeth Stevens. Part of the FBA proposal is to have the individual immigration judges or people nominations for people to become immigration judges come from the local community. We believe that this will come from a broad spectrum of the local community. We believe that this will help in bringing a more responsive and more localized feel to the immigration judges themselves. Thank you.
Anyone else? Operator, do we have any other final questions?
There are no further questions at this time.
Well, thank you very much again to the speakers and to the reporters who were able to join today. And this will conclude our telepress conference. Have a good afternoon.